Welcome to Baseball Biz on Deck. I'm Mark Harper, your host. And with me today, once again, is Mr. Matt Germain, the co-host of this show, who knows everything about the Rays. He can dig deep. We talked about that before. And he's had to dig deep into the sand of Florida with the spring training this week. So much going on, and yet maybe not so much. So we're going to find out from Matt here in just a second. Hey, Matt, how you doing today, buddy?
Chilling in Canada, buddy.
Gosh, you mean you're not having 74 degree weather there right now?
I wish. One day I will be there for spring training just for that reason.
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's 65 actually out here in Plant City at the moment, but it's getting up sometimes days that as high as 78. It's like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. So anyway, Sweet. Yeah. As long as it ain't August, brother, I'm fine. Oh, goodness. Well, I can't believe it. I mean, we were just talking about a week and a half ago, I guess, about pitchers and catchers reporting, and now all that's done. They've been there for a bit, and spring training has actually started. Were you surprised at anything you've seen thus far?
Outside the uniforms, no. Everything has been standard. You've had some best shape of their life stories, people overhyping short-term performances, but I love it all. It's great. I'm like, do it. Go ahead. Hype it. Enjoy those moments and those, for some of the prospects playing right now, it'll be their only, time to shine in front of all the brass that don't get to see them the rest of the year. So go ahead. Enjoy it. Shine bright.
I love it. Like you and I have talked, I think we talked before about, some of those players, they are just going to be here for a while. People who almost like walk-ons during spring training. And during a spring training game, a lot of times you won't see but one pitcher per inning. So you get to see a lot of different talent coming up to the mound as well. As a matter of fact, I looked at the names today, Matt, and for pitching, I thought, do I know any of these guys? Are they anybody that was there last year?
Yeah, a good example would be Trevor Martin pitching for the Rays. They selected him in the third round of 2022 draft, and they had him throw 110 innings in A-ball this year or last year. So, he's making quite the big leap in today's performances. So facing an Orioles lineup that's pretty formidable, he looked really good in the first inning from what I hear. And then, Kobe Mayo just had a great day today and hit the ball pretty hard. But I think for the opportunity for him, of pitching to Rob Brantley and getting his feedback on how he saw things happening. And that's what I look for in spring, really, is who are they pairing with who? Where are they playing them? Where are they having a look at the guys and that kind of thing? How many times are they bringing them back? Because I think the first week you can kind of write off. And then the second week, you'll see a couple sent down, a couple more brought up. They take a look at a fresh group. But the guys that stick around through to the end, right? Like the last few, maybe a handful or handful plus of cuts. Those are the guys they're really considering for the year. And it'll be the first call-ups. But for a guy like Trevor Martin, it's more about showing that he might be able to handle a quick transition from A-plus to AA. And then he becomes an option as early as 2025, late 2025, obviously. But he's on the fast track, essentially.
Well, I was watching Trevor, you were talking about earlier, and pairing up the battery with the catcher. Let's see, you were saying, who is it? Rob Brantley. And, because Rob Brantley and Kenny Piper, they were the catchers today. Mejia wasn't even – he was there, I guess, but he wasn't playing. Let's see. And it reminds me, as far as pairing the battery, when I remember we had Charlie Morton, and it was always – I don't know if it was always, but it was going to be Darnold most of the time. They get a synchronicity between the two of them. They have a sense of energy, a symbiotic, if you will, to be able to master the communication of pitching and catching, I guess. And I'm really curious to see how that develops with these pitchers and the new catchers.
Absolutely. And I think that's the importance of bringing someone in like Brantley. Brantley is not, what you would call like a Yadier Molina type name across MLB, but he's been in this league and in AAA and in the minors doing the work, and he knows the game extremely well. Whether or not he's a great player to help the Rays this year, he can actually have some input in different ways, including telling the pitchers, you know, how they can improve their the work they do. Some things that he might spot that'll stop him from, you know, giving things away when they're on the mound. There's a million different things that you can point to. And I think that has a lot of value through an organization. So a lot of times when you see their AAA catchers, that's what normally you'll have, is some sort of veteran presence that's molding the guys that might get the call. Right? It's not the glitziest of jobs, but it is an important one for sure.
Well, this is the time too where they got those JIC players, the just in case players. But I was looking at the stats for that game today with the Orioles. It was interesting because he mostly were one inning for most for each of the nine pitchers for the Rays that pitched today. Mm-hmm. And of that, they had 15 strikeouts and 5 walks. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Junior Caminero and Tanner Murphy both hit a home run. Mm-hmm. So that was impressive. And I looked at the Orioles. They took a slightly different tack. They had 5 pitchers over 9 innings. They had 9 strikeouts and 3 walks. So it was – I said something to you before the show about a good buddy of mine at Full Count Chaos. And he had posted something on X.com about – oh my gosh, spring training. What am I going to think? I said, you remember what it is. It's spring training, dude. Come on, relax. Yeah,
you want people to stay healthy. That's about it. But I always look at who's giving up the runs, right? And that's really, you know, who was it that said Nolan Ryan might have been one of the worst spring training pitchers of all time? And I mean, it doesn't mean anything, but they're always working on. If you're a pitcher and you want to work on something that you know you're going to need or want to use in a game later on, and that's going to bail you out of hard spots, this is the time to do it. This is the time to kind of get used to that, whatever it is you're trying to do. So, and for everybody, I think that's different. I think the good thing too is that you also get to show people what you can do. So obviously they're trying to do things, not just lobbing the ball up there. I think if you looked at yesterday's game, guys like Ian Seymour, you know, they had serious injuries that they're recovering from and came back in 2023, but weren't really peaking. And now they get to show, you know, what their stuff is really like when it's healthy. And Logan Workman is another guy, same day, same game, and he gave up 5 runs. And so he's having a hard time, you know, starting his spring off, but it doesn't mean that they're going to give up on it. And either way, it doesn't matter. We don't know what he was working on, what they asked him to show. And same thing for Ian Seymour. Yeah, everybody has their own story.
Well, let me ask you, friend of friend here. Mm-hmm. I've never asked you, I think, as far as your passion about the Rays. I mean, you live a few miles away from Tampa. You know, the same continent, but different country, and up here in Canada. And I think, well, what was the appeal? What, of all the 30 teams out there, what was the appeal of the Rays for you to start studying them? I mean, you've got the tenacity of like a scout who's going over what's going on with the minor leagues, what's coming up, the people throughout the entire system. And that doesn't just happen. What started that with you?
So the whole tenacity thing is interesting because I started blogging just on my own, no affiliation whatsoever, about the Blue Jays way back when. I can't even remember when I started. But eventually, I ended up doing an interview of Noah Syndergaard. And because of that, it got me into a fan site. And I ended up writing for a Jays Journal for a long period of time. And I was their lead editor for the ramp-up period is what I call it. Like when they went from nothing to being the second most viewed site on their site. Wow. Outside of the Kansas City Chiefs, because the Chiefs were what they had started that site with. So anyways, I was having a lot of success, but I was also in the military at the same time. So it was a balancing act between the two. And eventually I ended up going to do some training that required me to step away from it altogether. So I handed the reins to Keegan Matheson, who is now, you know, writing for the Blue Jays on MLB.com. So he took the reins and did a very good job with it, obviously, earning that role later on. But when I came back and he was still in charge and I had completed my training, I was stuck with not really being able to have as big of a role on Jays Journal as I liked. And they had a challenge for me in terms of covering the Rays. They said they didn't have anybody that wanted to pick it up because Rays colored glasses was having a hard time. So I said, you know what, I'll take it on just as a challenge and see how it goes. And that's how I got involved with, you know, paying attention to all the details about the Rays. And over time, the more and more and more I dug into it, the more I appreciated what they were doing. And I was able to contrast it with what I knew from the Jays side of things. And I mean, I was covering the JP Ricciardi era. So it was just a minefield of errors that you could draw back on. So I appreciated the mythology that the Rays were using. And after that point, I kind of grew to like them even more because of how the refusal to tank, basically. And that's when I really earned they earned my respect, basically, to the point where I was like, no, like, this is the way every team should operate. The way that they value every asset that they have, every edge, every angle, every single detail. And this is what I mean when I say Stu Sternberg is probably the best owner in Major League Baseball right now when it comes to being able to build a winner, regardless of the money thrown at it. Mm-hmm. It's just a demand of excellence at the top of the front office, and he is in control of that front office. Make no mistake about it. He decides who has those jobs. So he's done that job of hiring the right people and keeping the right people, even though they have all these, you know, really, really talented people leading the organization every year. And he's able to still maintain a nucleus that is strong enough and ahead of the times at all times. So when I've covered that, the details part and the digging in and being really hardcore about it comes from the fact that when you work for a site like FanSided and you have very few writers on your team at the beginning and you have to shell out so many stories per month in order to get, you know, any sort of value from it monetarily, then you have to write a lot of articles and dig in every corner to get stories that are worthwhile writing about. So that got me used to actually digging into all the finer details of the game. And so I really think that probably more than anything improved my intelligence about, or my baseball IQ, basically, because I had to dig every day for a different story.
Right.
So essentially, that's it in a nutshell. I know it's a long story, but eventually I was taken in by D-Rays Bay in order to write for them because they liked what they seen from me on Rays colored glasses. I jumped ship and went over there for a bit. I really enjoyed my time there. Learned a lot from the guys at D-Rays Bay. Eventually, I wanted to try to do my own thing again. So I started Wander Rays, and it just... It got to the point where I was working too much on it and I need to focus more on my kids. So yeah. I said, you know what? I'm going to do what I do on Twitter. I really enjoyed it. I said, I'm sharing, you know, some finer details and just enjoying the game and enjoying the Rays and sharing that with everyone. I don't need to have my own site and run that on top of it. So I kind of started using Twitter as the platform that I wanted to share that with everyone. So that's my story.
Wow. This is the first time I guess I really asked you about that. I'm glad I did, because the depth of where you've been with all of this, I mean, in the trail from one place to another, you know, where you were needed, change in values of what you've got, you know, being a family man with children. I get that big time. And, but to see that you're still, that interest that you have, you're still able to go ahead and keep it, that kind of knowledge and share it with folks. And if you don't know people, you can find Matt on Twitter, X.com, whatever you want to call it, at underscore Matt, and that's M-A-T underscore Germain, G-E-R-M-A-I-N underscore. And that's where you're going to find him at Twitter. Got to tell you, that's where I think it was me or was it Brandon who used to be on the show and found you first. But it's like, wow, who is this guy? Because you're great at breaking down what's going on with the Rays position by position and your sense of what is going on at each of the minor league levels feeding into the Rays. So you share a lot with that. So people, again, I'm going to encourage y'all to check out Matt on Twitter. And that's Matt, M-A-T underscore Germain, G-E-R-M-A-I-N underscore on Twitter. Oh, wow, brother. So, I mean, it's a passion you still have. And you said something that really sticks with me, too. That's the whole idea of whatever else I may think about the esteemed owner of the Tampa Bay Rays, I do have to respect what he's done with the money that he has. You know, and I think, was Neander a key part of it? Eric Neander, is he the one who kind of helped turn the key on that? Or was it already in motion before Eric was there in the front office?
You mean in terms of increasing the amount of money that they're spending now?
Well, I would say effectively using the amount of money. I mean,
oh, effectively. Yeah. I think that might have swayed a little bit more from the Andrew Friedman times, but again, that was still Stu Sternberg. So it was more of a, I think it's living within your means. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, there was a period of time where Stu had to try to get, motivate, I should say, the Tampa side to be willing to share in the cost of a stadium. And he needed to be able to amp up the volume on that. And he knew there was going to be a cost associated with that. And it probably was going to be attendance. I think that stifled investment more than anything else, because he knew that attendance was going to lag while he was trying to work that out on the Tampa side. Because really, when you look at the franchise as a whole on the Tampa side, if he had been successful in doing that, that the franchise value would have been maybe close to double what it will be in St. Petersburg. Mm. So it had a significant, you know, motivation factor for him. Having said that, he also could have easily tried to move the team out of the area, gone to, you know, Nashville would have opened their doors huge for Stu if he wanted to do it. He said no. Montreal would have, I'm not sure how much they would have given him for the actual team. So I don't think that would have been an actual option in its right. But anyhow, I think Stu has had opportunities to turn his back on Tampa or St. Pete. And he hasn't done so yet. You know, it's not finished until the building's fully built and then they're playing ball in the new stadium. But I think that when you look at the value that he's brought to the team over the last, you know, 5 to 7 years, I think the Kevin Cash hiring might have been, you know, the first big game changer. But also when he handed the reins to Eric Neander, what it did is it actually made the Rays a better organization through and through. I don't know what conversations and what scouting changes happened between Andrew Friedman and Eric Neander, but the game plan when it came to drafting and targeting key free agents was much better under Neander. If you look back at the drafts that Andrew Friedman had, they're horrific. Some of the worst in MLB history. And I mean that with like a glowing heart on what he meant to the franchise and the value that he brought to the team overall because of it. But Eric Neander has tried different things that I don't think Andrew Friedman would have tried in a way that made more sense for what the Rays are. So acquiring guys like Charlie Morton when they're not really getting the money they should have elsewhere is a good example. Like spending $15 million, yeah, you're not buying a flurry of free agents, but you're buying the right free agent. Right. Same thing before that, he did Wilson Ramos and the same kind of thing. Nate Eovaldi, he was able to get value out of all these guys that he brought in because they were targeting and trying to do a certain thing that made sense for the team that year. And I think that focused injection of talent in the right key areas and never giving up on the asset has been much more aggressive under Eric Neander than it has been on Andrew Friedman. But I think that also comes from the organization as a whole continuously learning to improve how it operates. And that did start under Andrew Friedman. So I give him kudos for that.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's so easy sometimes when a new boss comes in and whatever good comes, he said, well, you know, that was all my job. I did it. Not that Neander would do this, but I'm just saying in some situations you see where a new manager comes into a store and everything that was terrible comes the next few weeks. And, well, that was because the guy preceded me and not me. But, you know, you see obviously a synchronicity between what Friedman and also what Neander's doing that Friedman at least laid the foundation for some of that. So that's good to know.
Absolutely.
As long as we're talking about foundations, I want to take a look at the prospects for the Rays. Look at MLB's. See, they gave us four positions out of 100. Again, what's that? I'll run it down real quick. Number four, Junior Caminero, who's our, what, shortstop, third baseman. Carson Williams, shortstop. We'll talk about what that means with Mr. Taylor Walls in a bit. Curtis Meade, third baseman, second baseman. He's number 55 on that list. And number 58 was Xavier Isaac, who would play first base sometimes.
So an entire infield.
Yep. Yeah.
And all of them will be in double A or above by the end of this year.
So. Jeez.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like those guys, each one of those can be the best at their position at some point in time in Major League Baseball. You can make the argument for Junior Caminero as a third baseman could be the best third baseman in MLB at some point in his career. You could say the same thing for Xavier Isaac at first base. You can say the same thing for Carson Williams at shortstop. And you can say the same thing for Curtis Meade at second base. They are extremely talented if they hit their ceilings. Now, that's a big if, and there's a long road ahead to that. But I think what's interesting is they left out some guys that I think have a case. I'm not saying they have to be in the top 100. And the Rays do have a little bit more of a drop-off this year than they have in recent years. But that's also because they've promoted so many guys onto their roster that they're left a little bit lower in the talent pool at the upper echelons than they normally have had. But Austin Shenton was one of the best hitting prospects in AAA last year. And he can play first and third, does a solid job, runs the bases well. He's not fast by any means, but he's one of those guys that when you look at his performance, you compare it to Jonathan Aranda, for example, there's a very close synchronicity between the two in terms of what they accomplished in AAA. So if you're going to rank Jonathan Aranda and as one of the better hitters on the team going into 24, and a lot of people are expecting big things from him as he replaces Luke Raley as a left-handed bat, then Austin Shenton is like the backup to that. So if it doesn't work out for Jonathan Aranda, then Austin Shenton can get a shot and show what he can do. But I think he deserved a shot on the top 100.
Well, it's good to hear that we have the kind of depth that we do. And sometimes I'm scratching my head and saying, okay, what does that mean for the future of the Jonathan Aranda or Isak Paredes or even Yandy? And I know that Yandy and Isak, you can see them as DH just about any game. But, you know, we don't keep guys for too long.
But yeah, this is part of the thing that I was saying with Eric Neander and his plan being better than Andrew Friedman. So when Eric Neander took over the team in 2017, if you looked at every position, there was no competition. Everybody knew they had the job walking into spring training. You knew Brad Miller was walking on. You knew Longo was walking on. Beckham was walking on. There was not going to be any changes. There was no competition. Nobody pushing them from behind and saying, I'm coming for your job. That's what I love about this team. And this Rays team is forcing guys to be at their best at all times, to be competitive, to be highly motivated, to be at their best every single day. That 2017 team had a much better pitching staff than we'll have this year. This year in the rotation, they should have won 84, maybe 85 games. And they did much worse than that because they were so guaranteed in their positions. I firmly believe that. And they didn't really have to exceed expectations in any way, shape, or form to keep their jobs.
Yeah, I've heard Cash say a couple of times about it being very competitive this year. He tries to avoid saying that he wants his guys competing against one another, but he does see, you know, he does sense what's going on out there. And it's a good environment. It does make everybody step up. So I'm really curious to see how the Rays do this year. I'm not necessarily looking for 100 games this year. It's way too early to tell. But
yeah,
I'm going to be a bit more conservative this year when you and I actually choose some numbers later on in a future episode. We'll see. What else you hear? Yeah.
We'll have to see where Snell and Montgomery and it land and how healthy everybody comes out of spring. I usually like to make my predictions maybe 7 to 10 days before the end of spring. And then I firm them up.
Gotcha. Well, I'll be curious to see what Neander and Stu do with maybe as much as $170 million if they can get that back from Mr. Franco. Well, they have not actually given it to him, but they're not going to be. If things don't work out for Mr. Franco, that money could surely be reallocated.
Yeah, well, to me, what that money was for was to make sure that when they walked into that new stadium, they were going to have a phenom, a stud, a basically their version of Jose Ramirez, as he is for the Guardians, right?
Right.
Because they weren't going to have a dozen of those guys, but they were going to have at least one. So when you're looking at the team now, you're saying, well, now they get a do-over. They get to kind of look around MLB and their own team and say, okay, well, who could we decide to do that with? It doesn't mean they have to, but right. Junior Caminero would be a good example of someone that they might decide is worthy of that by the end of the year. If they like what they see, maybe let's say come August and they're like, yeah, this guy's just is insane. And he is insane in how he plays the game. He's been mature well beyond his years. Then they can offer the same kind of deal or something similar to what they gave Wander Franco, maybe not to the number of years, but a significant value anyway.
Well, it gives them flexibility. That's I see that, man. So we're going to see what they do to play with that. Oh, speaking of playing, and there's one, it's not a spring training game. It's an exhibition game. We got coming up March 9th in the Dominican Republic with the Red Sox. Yeah.
You know, everybody's asking, is Wander going to be there?
Oh gosh. You know, I had somewhere I got a JPEG of a poster that has Wander on it for that event. It was an early poster. So gosh. Yeah. Yeah. Is he going to be in the stands with the cameras and all be tracking him all the way through it? I don't know, but it should be an interesting two games. Oh my gosh. So let's see. Yeah,
I don't know how it's going to end up for Wander, but I think eventually down the line, he's going to end up needing a lot of help emotionally and physically, because he's just to come, to be high up on the pedestal as he was, and then to be all the way down to not being able to pay your lawyers. And, I'm sure that he doesn't get nearly the amount of attention that he's been used to his entire life.
Oh, yeah.
From the age of like 12, this guy was the focus of attention every single day. So I don't know. As a human being, I think that he's probably feeling about as much of the brunt of the fall from grace that you could ever feel. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and I go back to, I'm not trying to give anybody a pass on anything, but the one thing I do worry about is we have these people so young, like you're saying, even 12 or 13 years of age, and we throw them this adult world, and there's no guidance. I really hoped that some of the older Latin players would be able to give him some guidance. But first, it has to be receptive, too. Well, I wish all the people involved, I wish them the best, whatever that may be. Oh, I got to wonder, though, what kind of uniforms are they going to be wearing March 9th? are they going to – will I be able to read the names? I hear the lettering now with the new uniforms. Yeah. The lettering is smaller, and so people are probably going to have a hard time reading who they are. Might as well be watching the Yankees.
Yeah. The uniforms in Major League Baseball, if anything, they should be improving over time. They should not be getting worse. The quality of fabrics we have now, like if anybody's ever worn anything from Lululemon, it feels like you're wearing wind. Like it's just soft and barely feel it on your body. It is not see-through. And it is, it's durable and it's antiperspirant and yada, yada, yada. Like you do not need to go down the road Nike did. And if I was the commissioner of Major League Baseball, I would be demanding before we even got to this point. Like, it should have been vetted before it actually came out publicly as the chosen clothing and style. And I just, there's so much to criticize about it that I don't even know where to start, to be honest. Remember when Great Britain played in the World Baseball Classic and the T from Great came off on the uniform? Do you remember that? That was a Nike jersey. That was like, you know, come on. Like, what are you doing? This is just...
I'd forgotten that, man. Yeah, I do remember that now.
It's so sad. Like, I know it was a rush job, but you can go to any t-shirt shop in any major city and get t-shirts made fairly quickly. Nike should be able to do that on a heartbeat. So I think Major League Baseball needs to take a step back, and I hope somebody in there in their marketing department, which I hold no value for whatsoever, can come together and say, whoa, guys, what are we doing? We need to revisit, you know, how we operate. And I think when Rob Manfred does leave as commissioner, I think that'll be the biggest value that the league ever gets is marketing. Like, he is completely clueless when it comes to marketing the game. And I don't know why, because there's enough people telling him, I'm sure, how to do it right.
I would hope so, but yeah, it's, you see these uniforms and say, I can read. He's wearing a Calvin Klein t-shirt. Oh, God. Oh, no. It's more than I want to know. And
on a rainy day, Mark, there's going to be enough ladies glued to the TV.
Kevin Kiermaier, you're living heaven. Oh, my gosh. No, it's fun. I got to love this game. And I am going to curious to see how that all does play out in the Dominican Republic. I always feel for the teams that have to go across several time zones sometimes for, you know, if they had to go all the way to Japan or something just before the regular season starts. So yeah. Dominican Republic, at least probably pretty much in the same time zone. So that shouldn't be too bad.
Absolutely. No, it'll be a good experience for them. And I mean, I'm all for growing the game and I think they should be going to a lot more places, to be quite honest. Like, it's nice that they are starting to do that more regularly for sure.
Yeah. Well, we're going to follow the Rays, my wife and I, at least on the road, looking at probably going to see them in Atlanta, Milwaukee. Let's talk about X-rays. Cronenworth, I'm trying to think where Jake Cronenworth is now. Is he still with
Padres?
Yeah, Padres. And Snell, who knows where he's going to be. God, Lord.
You know who I'm happy for is Mike Brosseau. He came back over from Asia, and he's now with the Royals. So he's back with Matt Cattaro in Kansas City, and he's getting a shot. And he actually got a hit today, I think. So he's getting some playing time and getting back to North America to play. I think guys that I think of X-rays are like, there's like Brett Wisely is in San Francisco. Joey Wendell's in New York. He's trying to get them, you know, some gloveless love. Willie Adames is still in Milwaukee. He'll probably be shipped out at some point this year if they don't envision a long playoff run. So that'll be interesting to see where he goes. There's a lot of pitchers that I'm monitoring, like, that are X-rays, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Or if Blake Snell keeps holding out as long as he is, everybody's going to start talking about a 1-year deal back with the Rays. We're not that happening.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know. It's been interesting. Mr. Boers has had things running rampant, and I don't know if they'll actually settle down with some of the Yankees. I don't think it'll be necessary what he or Blake wanted, but it's probably going to be the case. Mm-hmm. I'll say one last thing because I always think of one more. But you know, you mentioned earlier looking at the management. The Rays have been picked through their front office. I mean, was it James Glick? They had, and then Boston had Chaim Bloom, and I don't know where Chaim is right now. But there's a lot of people who've come from the front office, and you talk about Matt Quatraro. And, well, let's see, Timmons was with our first base coach is now with Milwaukee. And
yeah, we could do an entire episode just on where guys have landed and who they've plucked where. It's insane. Yeah. There are so many front office people from the Rays that go around. I think that to me is more telling than anything. If you can name me, you know, I know we talked about Ng the last time we talked, but other than her, are there any, you know, major New York Yankees executives that you remember, you know, getting poached from them that are notable and you're like, oh yeah, that guy came from the, or this, you know, same can be said. I think Theo Epstein is the one that you remember most from, mm-hmm. from the Red Sox. But outside of that, like they're not a machine getting plucked annually from executives. And I think that's a very telling thing. I also think, you know, you see where guys want to go. And so when front office guys may not have a job and they decide to go to that organization just to stay in the game and to stay relevant and to kind of have an injection of knowledge, you see them go to Los Angeles, you see them go to Atlanta, you see them go to the Rays. And so that's very telling as well, right? Because they're kind of wanting to rub shoulders with some of the best organizations in baseball. So that they can take that with them when they do end up getting another job or another shot at it.
Well, the Rays organization is, like I said, we can beat our chest or we can at least give, you know, lauds to the good folks there in the front office. Like I said, as much as I like to cry and whine about Stu, I can't say that he hasn't done a great job in building this team that we have today. So kudos to you, Stu. I may not say it very often, so pick it up today.
Yeah, and I, to be clear, I understand people's gripes with the way that things have been hashed out. I just know that it was almost a business necessity for him to try to work out what he tried. And I get it. Now he's kissing and making up and wanting to move on to a new stadium and exciting times in St. Pete.
Well, I'm ready for it, brother. I'm ready for the season to start. And I'm looking forward to this new team. I'm looking forward to the competitive nature in spring training with the Tampa Bay Rays because, like you said, it's a hungry crowd. Those who want to keep their spots and those who want to come up, it's a good time to see some very exciting baseball.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Enjoy it. Take your kids. Get some autographs.
That's it, man. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt, thanks again, buddy. Any other parting words you want to share with our audience?
No, just, you know, start thinking about game tickets. If you're not going to the spring, go to the regular season game, support the Rays. They're doing their best with what they got. And I, even though, like you mentioned, not having them as a 100-game winner this year, I would not be shocked if they are. And the reason being that I think in season, they're going to get an oomph of talent from Shane Baz, Jeffrey Springs, like other teams may not get. And I think that's going to go a long ways to keeping them at the top of their game. I'm also a huge fan of Uwasawa, who I think is getting underplayed in terms of his impact that he's going to have on the team. So I don't put it past them to reach, you know, 90, high 90s again, maybe 100. We'll see. But I'm going to hold out judgment until we're late in the spring. And when we're about 10 days out, I'll give you my verdict.
I'm looking forward to it, brother. Well, thank you again, Matt. Again, folks, you can find Matt on Twitter, and you can find him at Matt_Germain_. And that's Matt_Germain, which is Germain_ Twitter. You can find me, Mark, at TheBaseballBiz on Twitter as well. Thank you again for joining us here today, and we look forward to talking to you guys again real soon. Special thanks to XTKRUX for the music, Rocking Forward.
Woo-hoo. Little cheer, I love it.